Welcome to Crash Investigation, the podcast, the show where we dissect and discuss prominent crashes in aviation history. I'm your host, Kai, and in today's episode, we're going to be discussing Aloha Airlines Flight 243, the crew, the crash, the investigation. But before we continue, if you're listening on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc., don't forget to rate the podcast. And if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to hit the like button. And one last thing, the podcast actually has a Patreon. On this Patreon, you know, there's a lot of behind the scenes content, a lot of early access to the episodes that appear on here. There is access to all of the final reports of all of the crashes that I have discussed on this podcast. There's of course some exclusive podcast episodes available. If you're on YouTube, then you can see. But yeah, there's just a lot of things there. So if you have the means and you'd like to support the podcast so that I can get better equipment so that this experience is better for you as the listener, then please go check it out. And if you do not want to do the month-to-month thing because I know how tough the economy is, then check out our PayPal. The link will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy the episode. Now that that is out of the way, let us get started.
Stay tuned.
And there's no fuel.
Closing in, looks like they've...
Aloha Airlines Flight 243 was a scheduled flight for the 28th of April 1988. Its origin was Hilo International Airport, Hilo, Hawaii, and its destination was Honolulu International Airport, now called Daniel K. Ndoye International Airport, Honolulu, Hawaii. But for the sake of this episode, I'm going to be referring to the airport as Honolulu International Airport, also because this case happened a long time ago. The aircraft used was the Boeing 737-297. I'm going to be referring to this flight as Aloha Flight 243 or Aloha 243. And actually, fun fact, the aircraft's name was Queen Liliuokalani. Sorry if I said that wrong. And I just think that is a beautiful name and something that I feel like I should add. The crew and passengers. The captain of this flight was Robert Schoensheimer, was 44 years old at the time of the flight. He had 8,500 flight hours with 6,700 on the Boeing 737. The first officer was Madeline Mimi Tompkins, who was 36 years old, and she had 8,000 flight hours with 3,500 of those hours on the Boeing 737. This was essentially a qualified crew. There were 90 passengers and 3 flight attendants on board. Before the flight, at 5 a.m. Hawaiian Standard Time, First Officer Tompkins checked in at the Aloha Airlines Operations Facility. She completed the necessary documents and performed the pre-flight checklist and visual exterior inspection. She found nothing unusual. At 10 minutes past 5 a.m., Captain Schoensheimer checked in, completed his pre-departure duties, then went to the airplane. The crew completed 3 flights, and these 3 flights left from Honolulu and went to Hilo, Maui, and Kauai. These flights were uneventful. Then, at 25 minutes past 1 p.m., Aloha Airlines Flight 243 takes off from Hilo Airport, and it was supposed to land at Honolulu International Airport. In the event of a problem on board, they were told that they could land at Maui's Kahului Airport. First Officer Tompkins conducted the takeoff and climb. The flight was under visual meteorological conditions, and the crew didn't receive any advisories such as the significant meteorological information or SIGMET or the airman's meteorological information AIRMET. The aeroplane was leveling out at 24,000 feet or 7,315 meters when both pilots heard a loud sound followed by a whoosh behind them. Debris started to float in the cockpit, meaning that there's a problem. Captain Schoensheimer saw that the cockpit entry door was missing and I quote, There was blue sky where the first class ceiling had been. End quote. Captain Sean Steimer took control of the aeroplane. However, he said that it felt loose. There was a massive decompression. And if you have been listening to this podcast, you know how dangerous a decompression can be. So, Captain Sean Steimer began an emergency descent. The crew extended the speed brakes, and the airspeed at this point was between 280 to 290 knots. The crew had to use hand signals to communicate with each other because they could not hear each other due to the wind and debris. First Officer Tompkins reported that the rate of descent was 4,100 feet or 1,250 meters per minute. First Officer Tompkins turned the transponder to the emergency code 7700 to try and notify the Honolulu Air Route Traffic Control Center, or ARTCC. The crew could not hear the radio transmissions, and they weren't sure if the Honolulu ARTCC heard the transmissions. They were right in thinking so, because the Honolulu ARTCC did not hear it, but they saw the emergency code 7700 saying that they want to go 23 nautical miles south-southeast of Kahului Airport, Maui. At 12 minutes to 2 p.m., the ARTCC tried to communicate with Aloha Flight 243 with no success. The aeroplane descended to 14,000 feet or 4,267 meters, and that was when First Officer Tompkins switched the radio to the Maui Tau frequency. She then informed the tower about the rapid decompression, declared an emergency, and requested emergency equipment. Luckily, this message went through. The Maui Tower acknowledged and began notifying emergency personnel, and the emergency personnel positioned themselves along the left side of the runway. At 7 minutes to 2 p.m., First Officer Tompkins let the controller know that, and I quote, "We're going to need assistance. We cannot communicate with the flight attendants. We'll need assistance for the passengers when we land," end quote. And that is what the air traffic controller did. Captain Sean Steimer started slowing the aeroplane down as the aeroplane approached 10,000 feet or 3,048 meters mean sea level. He retracted the speed brakes and started turning towards Maui's runway 2. They were at 210 knots and the crew could finally communicate with one another. Captain Sean Steimer told the first officer to lower the flaps to 5. The aeroplane was less controllable, which is a problem. Captain Sean Steimer then told First Officer Tompkins to lower the gear. She did so, however, the light indicated that it was down and locked, but the nose gear light didn't illuminate. They tried manually and they were unsuccessful. Honestly, if I was on this flight, I would have cried myself to sleep at that point, because imagine a rapid decompression and now the landing gear doesn't want to drop. At 5 minutes to 2 p.m., First Officer Tompkins told the tower, and I quote, "We won't have a nose gear. We'll need all the equipment you've got," end quote. While advancing the power levers, Captain Sean Steimer sensed a yawing motion, which I discussed in United Airlines Flight 585's episode, aka the episode before this one, so please go check it out if you haven't. And he determined that the left engine had failed. Which is why I'm saying that if I was on this flight, I would have cried myself to sleep. They tried to restart the engine, but they were unsuccessful. After this whole ordeal, as in when, you know, the investigation, people were investigating, the crew said that the aeroplane was shaking a little, rocking slightly, and felt springy. At 2 minutes to 2 p.m., Aloha Airlines Flight 243 lands on runway 2 at Kahului Airport. The thrust reverse and brakes were used to stop the aeroplane. 65 people were injured, with 8 really injured, and one person unfortunately passed away. But other than that, there were no other fatalities. Which is really saying something considering what has happened. The investigation. So the investigation was set out by the National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, of the United States of America. And I quote, "The extensive air and surface search of the ocean failed to locate the portions of the aeroplane lost during the explosive decompression," end quote. Meaning that the most important parts that they can use to investigate what happened while lost at sea. So now it made their job extremely hard. There really isn't any more information with regards to the wreckage because, as I've said, it got lost at sea. So we're going to move on to the survival aspects. The survival aspects, and I quote, "This was a survivable accident. The fatality was the result of the explosive nature of the decompression. The flight attendant was swept violently from the airplane and passed through an opening of jagged metal," end quote. Even though that happened with the flight attendant, it was a completely survivable accident. The origin of the fuselage separation. So the post-accident examination revealed, and I quote, "The remaining structure did not contain the origin of the failure," end quote. What I was saying during the wreckage part of this episode. They tried to find the debris in the ocean and the surrounding area, but they were unsuccessful. They used what they had. They analyzed the joints near the separation zone, and I quote, "This evidence indicated that the primary failure had originated at a location between BS360 and BS540, the joints by the separation zone, and the skin at these joints was pulled away in tension overload as a result of the primary failure. As a result, the areas along the longitudinal separation of section 43, which was basically where the joints BS360 and BS540 were examined as a likely area for the origin of the failure," end quote. Further analysis showed that there were fatigue cracks by BS520 and there was a lap joint near BS520. This is a very serious situation, as you can hear, and to make matters even worse, Aloha Airlines had information regarding their lap joint problems. They also had information regarding their fatigue cracks on all of their airplanes, not just this one. Which is a problem. A huge, huge, huge problem. So already I feel like you know where I'm going with this, but there are some technical things that I want to go through before we talk about the findings and the probable cause. The sequence of events, and I quote, "The Boeing 737s in the Aloha Airlines' fleet were high cycle airplanes, accumulating cycles at a faster rate than any other operator." And I want to say that is incredibly impressive for an airline, but it's incredibly suspicious, especially with what I'm going to talk about next. If you can hear a dog barking, apologies for that, it's not my dog. Aloha Airlines operated in a harsh corrosion environment. From what I know about Hawaii, it is a hot environment. There's water surrounding Hawaii, and maybe that's what also sped up the whole process of corrosion. And I don't know if you did geography, but I did, and I learned that water or like weather in general can lead to corrosion. And then when you mix that up with fatigue cracks and stuff, which I'm going to talk about later on, you understand why this accident happened. Aloha Airlines previously had discovered a 7.5-inch or 19.5-centimeter crack along the lap joint 10L on another Boeing 737 airplane. Problem. Boeing had issued and records indicating that Aloha Airlines was aware of a SB covering lap joint inspection and repair in 1972, revised in 1974, and upgraded to an ASB in 1987. And the FAA had issued an AD in 1987 requiring inspections of the lap joints along S-4 and referencing the Boeing ASB, which called for inspection of other lap joint locations, including along S-10, end quote. Meaning that someone didn't do their job. Someone didn't do their job. Aloha Airlines' maintenance program. So there are three factors of concern, according to the FAA, with regards to their maintenance program. Number one, there was a high accumulation of flight cycles between structural inspections. Number two, there was an extended time period between inspections that allowed the related effects of lap joint disband, corrosion, and fatigue to accumulate. And number three, the manner in which a highly segmented structural inspection program was implemented. Red flags across the board. And I quote, the Aloha Airlines' maintenance program did not adequately recognize and consider the effects of the rapid accumulation of flight cycles, end quote. Therefore, meaning that they didn't do the checks that they were supposed to do enough time / in between flights. Therefore, if an aeroplane isn't properly maintained, it will start to deteriorate and things such as fatigue cracks will start showing, which will then lead to massive decompressions, thus putting people's lives at risk. The findings. Number one, the flight crew was certified and qualified for the flight, and the aeroplane was dispatched in accordance with company procedures and federal regulations. Doesn't mean that it was okay. Number two, weather was not a factor in this accident. Number three, although Aloha Airlines operated according to the FAA's operating certificate and operation specifications, the quality of Aloha Airlines' maintenance and inspection program was deficient. Number four, there was no evidence of pre-existing failure or malfunction of the airplane's air conditioning, pressurization, pneumatic or electrical systems that could have contributed to the fuselage failure. Number five, the flight crew's use of a target speed of 280 to 290 knots and speed brakes in the descent after the structural separation indicated that they did not consider the appropriate emergency descent checklist, which states in part that if a structural integrity is in doubt, SB should be limited as much as possible and high maneuvering loads should be avoided. Now with this one, I don't really blame the pilots for not using the emergency descent checklist, because I feel like if you and I were in that situation, we would do what we feel would be best. That's just me though. Number six, the left engine became inoperative because the engine control cable separated due to an increase in cable tension caused by cabin floor deformation coupled with corrosion found in the area of cable separation. Number seven, the fuselage failure initiated in the lap joint along S-10L. The failure mechanism was a result of multiple site fatigue cracking of the skin adjacent to rivet holes along the lap joint upper rivet row and test strap disband, which negated the fail-safe characteristics of the fuselage. Number 8. The fatigue cracking initiated from the knife edge associated with the countersunk lap joint rivet holes. The knife edge concentrated stresses that were transferred through the rivets because of lap joint disbanding. Number 9. Although a representative fuselage section of a Boeing 737 was tested to 150,000 cycles during certification, the test did not reflect the fatigue performance of the actual fleet aircraft because the test parameters did not consider the long-term effects of disbanding, corrosion, and fatigue cracking in the lap joints as experienced in airline service. Number 10, there was sufficient information available to Aloha Airlines to alert it to the cracking problems associated with the deterioration of lap joint bonds, and Aloha should have followed a maintenance program to detect and repair cracking before it reached a critical condition. Number 11, it was not determined whether Aloha Airlines actually performed the required eddy current inspection in compliance with AD 87-21-08 or whether it was performed ineffectively. Number 12. A properly conducted eddy current inspection performed in accordance with AD 87-21-08 in November 1987 would have detected additional fatigue cracks in the holes of the upper rivet row of the lap joint along S-4R. Number 14, FAA licensed aircraft and power plant mechanics are not required to be knowledgeable in the maintenance and inspection of modern contemporary airplanes because the training curriculum had not kept pace with aviation industry technology. All of this is just like, oh, this accident should not have happened. Number 15, the human factors issues associated with visual and non-destructive inspection, which can degrade inspector performance to the extent that theoretically detectable damage is overlooked. If you want to read all of them, then check out the Patreon. It's like $3 to sign up. And yeah, that's it. You get access to all of the exclusive content, all of the final reports, things like that, because I know that it's hard to get final reports for these cases. So go check it out if you have the means, and if you don't, thank you so much for listening though. The probable cause. The National Transportation Safety Board determines that the probable cause of this accident was the failure of the Aloha Airlines' maintenance program to detect the presence of significant desponding and fatigue damage, which ultimately led to the failure of the lap joint at S-10L, the separation of the fuselage upper lobe. Contributing to the accident were the failure of Aloha Airlines management to supervise properly its maintenance force, the failure of the FAA to evaluate properly the Aloha Airlines' maintenance program, and to assess the airline's inspection and quality control deficiencies, the failure of the FAA to require Airworthiness Directive 87-21-08 inspection of all of the lap joints proposed by Boeing Alert Service Bulletin SB 737-53A1039, and the lack of a complete determinating action, neither generated by Boeing nor required by the FAA, after the discovery of early production difficulties in the Boeing 737 cold bond lap joint, which resulted in low bond durability, corrosion, and premature fatigue cracking. So if you heard, it's Boeing's fault, it's the FAA's fault, it's Aloha Airlines' fault, meaning that it is a mixture of maintenance error, human error, negligence, FAA's error, and structural failure. It's a lot. Just know that the pilots did what they could. The recommendations. As a result of its investigation of the accident, the National Transportation Safety Board made the following safety recommendations. There are a lot, so as always, I'm only going to read about 3 or 5. To the Federal Aviation Administration. Number 1. Provide specific guidance and proper engineering support to principal maintenance inspections. 2. Evaluate modifications of airplane maintenance programs and operation specifications, which propose segmenting major maintenance inspections. Number 2. Identify operators whose airplane use differs significantly from the flight cycle versus flight time relationship upon which the maintenance planning document was predicated, and verify that their maintenance programs provide timely detection of both cycle and time related deficiencies. I think that this one is an amazing one. Number 3, revise the regulations governing and certification of aviation maintenance technician schools and the licensing of airframe and power plant mechanics to require that the curriculum and testing requirements include modern aviation industry technology. I love that one too. And then we can't forget these two parties. To Aloha Airlines, number 1, revise the maintenance program to recognize the high time, high cycle nature of the fleet operations and initiate maintenance inspection and overhaul concepts based on realistic and acceptable calendar and flight cycle intervals. Number 2, initiate a corrosion prevention and control program designed to afford maximum protection from the effects of harsh operating environments. Number 3, revise and upgrade the technical division manpower and organization to provide the necessary management, quality assurance, engineering and technical training and production personnel to maintain a high level of airworthiness of the fleet. Then to the Air Transport Association. Assist member air carriers to establish maintenance department engineering services to evaluate maintenance practices, including structural repair, compliance with airworthiness directives and service bulletins, performance of inspection and quality assurance sections, and overall effectiveness of continuing airworthiness programs. And those are the recommendations. And I know I don't do this for all these other episodes, but I just got really invested with this one because this was a preventable accident. So I just wanted to know if Aloha Airlines was still operating, and they are not. They ceased service in 2008 and they filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. So yeah, that's what happened with Aloha Airlines. And you know what? High key, I'm glad that they stopped operating, because if they were like this back in the day, who's to say that they still wouldn't be like that right now? So I'm glad that, you know, they've just stopped operating because they were careless. But thank you so much for listening. If you are watching on YouTube, let me know what you think. Don't forget to hit the like button. If you are listening on any other podcast listening platform, thank you so much. Thank you. If you're listening on Spotify, there's that little box thingy at the bottom that asks you what you think about this episode. If you have any thoughts, constructive criticism, praise, whatever, then just leave that down there. And then if you're listening on all these other ones, Apple Podcasts and Amazon and etc., then just rate the podcast. But thank you so much for listening,
and see you next week. Cheers.